Hey folks, welcome to another episode of the Wrench Turners Podcast, the show that's about helping mechanics everywhere improve their health, their wellness, their happiness, and their production on the shop floor. I'm your host, Mr. Joshua Taylor, founder of Wrench Turners, and today I have a really amazing individual that I got to meet. I'm not entirely sure when this is going to air, but it's roughly a few weeks ago since we were together last. It's Michael Hilsden, and today we're going to get into it. Michael, thank you very much for giving some time out of your schedule. I know with family and work and all the rest of the things that life and family takes us through, that you're giving us some of your time. So we really appreciate that.
Thanks, Joshua. So happy to be here and part of the podcast. I have listened to countless episodes on already, and I just feel the content's amazing. So I couldn't wait to be a part of it. And meeting you a couple weeks back for your presentation for Nissan Canada in our area was amazing. So I'm just really excited to be a part of the podcast and growth for me and, you know, the podcast.
Awesome. I appreciate that. So let's talk right into it. These good folks want to know who you are. Let's start, at the beginning where we usually do. What got you into the automotive industry? What made you want to be a mechanic?
All right. Well, this is easy. So, I'm a Nissan guy, and what got me into it was my dad. My first car was a Nissan 240 SX 1989 before they were a drift car. And I've had like seven since then, but yeah, that's my first car, but it was a pile of crap kind of, but as a 19-year-old kid, I had to figure out how to fix it, and that I did not know. So my dad recommended through SAIT here, the Polytechnic in Calgary, to do he's just suggested, let's try a pre-apprentice program, and they offered one. It was in 2 weeks, so it was like, hey, do you want to sign up? Let's go, let's try. And I did that. I got a practicum kind of work experience program part at Sunridge Nissan in Calgary here. And after that, they took me on, and I spent my first 6.5 years at Sunridge Nissan. And I loved it. I just loved every bit of it. The growth. I'm a Nissan guy. I started out with the car before I worked there, and getting discount on parts really helped me out when you're a young kid and your car is not in such great condition. So there was benefits for both parties. I learned a lot, and so my dad got me into it, and I did my apprentice program at Sunridge, and then in 2010, I switched over to Royal Oak Nissan in Calgary, and that's where I've been ever since. So, but yeah, what got me started was my 240 SX, and that was it.
I had a 92.
Yeah.
Did you hatch or coupe?
Yeah, so my first one was a hatch. My second one was a 90 hatch. And then my third one was a 89 Silvia right-hand drive from Japan, a coupe, and that was before they were popular and before the right-hand drive craze and the drift craze took off. And so it was kind of a nightmare to own it, being one of the first few to have it, but looking back, I loved it. It was fun. It wasn't anything special, like as far as monster horsepower or anything, but and then later on, I got into, a bit of autocross and all the fun racing and stuff. So that, and then I got a few, another 240 that developed and more power and more upgrades and a lot of money down the toilet and on modifications.
It's not money wasted. And as much as they say it's not, it's because it's the love of doing it and being able to drive it and the community around it. The rest of the good stuff that goes along with it. No, it's not money wasted. It's money maybe now you wish you had.
Yeah, no, it's you're right. It's not money wasted, but sometimes there was money wasted. But overall, I look back and I wouldn't change it. I loved the cars, and they kept me you know, learning. They kept me just as much a part of it, right? And so I'm still a Nissan guy, and now my toy car is a 1990 300ZX twin turbo. So, you know, I've stuck with it all these years, the sports cars, the toys, and it's all Nissan. But yeah, it's been a fun run. So yeah.
Well, that's really awesome. I think that's one of the most underrated cars that you currently, that's one of the most underrated cars. They are, in my opinion, they are incredibly difficult to work on because it's packed in tighter than you can possibly imagine, packed in grease and an axle bearing. But my goodness, so lots. Okay, here's a question.
Yeah.
Did any of your first 240s, did the floor rot out?
No, but the strut mounts were like on the top of the strut towers. Those were pretty rotting.
I didn't rot on the strut towers. The floor of my 240 was so bad that the reason why I sold it is it rotted around the edge of the floor pan, around the edge of the seat. So I literally was coming home one night, and there's a bad road near where my grandparents used to live, and I was staying with them at the time. And it was so bumpy, and there were so many potholes. Boom, 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 crash. And now these rails are literally dragging on the grounds. So I'm back like this in the chair. For dear life, I couldn't reach the pedals anymore. So the only thing I could do was rip on the e-brake. And of course, e-brake going all the way back. I ripped the cables right out. So I'm fine for dear life, heading for a tree with the seat drying on the ground, the sparks going everywhere. So that's what led me to get out of the 240 game. But
Yeah, but you know, you're out east in Alberta. We don't have the corrosion quite like you have. So I did okay. I did okay for the rust, but yeah, now, you know, 10, 15 years later, I'm sure they're all rotted out somewhere, but
probably. And they're fetching a ridiculous price now from what I gather. I'm out of looking at, like, I used to be looking at them all the time, even just from, you know, grins and giggles, what is it worth and what are they selling for and some of the auctions and so on and so forth. But I've been out of that. But the last one I saw was like $15,000 for a clean coupe with no powertrain. It's absolutely asinine.
It's crazy. They, I don't know how they justify the price, but, you know, they're one of my first loves of cars. And so they kind of kept me in it and kept me at Nissan and, yeah.
Now, how much would you attribute some of your, we'll get into your first year in the trade here in a minute, but how much do you attribute to your education over the early parts of your career to the fact that you had seven of them and you were learning on how to fix things by owning all of these things? Do you attribute a lot to it or a little bit to it?
A lot for sure. But I mean, that was over time, the seven. So, you know, I had one, then I sold it, then I had another, sold it. So as my, I guess my knowledge and my income grew as I went through my apprenticeship, I was able to afford a little more go fast goodies and stuff like that. But, absolutely. You know, I blew a couple motors in them, you know, fried a clutch. And so, you know, there's no better way to learn than on your own car. And, you know, looking back through my apprenticeship, I had amazing mentors, amazing lead technicians that would always help me and teach me. And so, you know, a lot of the time I was fixing my car and they probably thought, what a pile of junk. Like, why is he doing this? But they still helped me. And, you know, it's the cars. Yeah, I attribute a lot to it, but I also had very good mentors that helped me. And I don't know if I'd be in the same spot if I was in a different shop with different people. So, you know, there's that too.
Gotcha. So that leads us to that first year. Did you now? I had a not so amazing literal first year where, you know, the first year of my, I won't even call it apprenticeship because I wasn't even given one for a year. But the first year was literally shoveling shit and getting coffee and doing the shuttle and doing those kinds of things. Did you experience the kind of same thing, or did you get jumped right in it? Because our good friend Richard Mueller, given the circumstances of his life and how that happened, he was right into fixing stuff right away. Where do you fall in that category?
Yeah, so it wasn't Richard's path, that's for sure. So I remember my first, it was with the first week, and I remember it vividly because I still think like how everyone in the shop must have been laughing at me. But my service manager said I had to share the undercoat bay. So it was a two-post hoist where they undercoated. And mm-hmm. I had to share that with the detailers. So when they weren't undercoating, I could do oil changes. And that was my first bay, or that or the alignment rack when it wasn't in use, and kind of swapping back and forth. And my first memorable job, it was in the first week, they gave me a pair of running boards off a old Pathfinder, you know, a hard body 96 or 98 or something. And they weren't on the car. He just gave them to me and he said, I need you to sand these up, prime them and paint them, make them look brand new for a client. And I didn't have, you know, air tools at the time. I didn't, you know, I was in my first week fresh out of like this pre-apprentice program. I didn't know a thing. So sure enough, you know, I'm going around asking all the guys, hey, could I borrow this? And you got some sandpaper. And it was, I think, 3 days probably doing this, cleaning these garbage sidesteps for a client. I don't even know if they actually went back on the car, but, or if it was just some sort of a hazing ritual they gave me, but everybody was just like, why are you doing this? And yeah, and it was a really crappy job, but it was, I did it. I didn't complain. And I, you know, got the chance to apprentice through that company. And yeah, it was good. But yeah, I did, you know, garbages every day in the first, you know, 3-4 years, cleaning the oil or dumping the oil. Back in that time, when I started at Sunergy, you had to physically dump the oil buckets into the bin out back. So it wasn't too environmentally friendly, but, you know, spilling and stuff. But it was just apprentice, just the crap apprentice stuff that, you know, I don't think apprentices today necessarily have to do, but yeah, I did, you know, the dirty stuff.
More expectations on them. If I'm going to be blunt, like they don't have to go through nearly the shite that I think that you and I and many of our age bracket, I think very specifically kind of our age bracket had to go through, because I think we were in a transition period. I think the big thing, you know, from 1997 till about 2007, the kind of stuff that you and I worked on probably full time when we first started our careers is kind of in that golden age of cars where they had nearly masterfully dealt with fuel injection and hadn't overtly complicated most of the car. Right, they had powered everything that had been manual, so it was still fairly simple, and it was just now electrically operated as most of options.
Yeah,
there wasn't, you know, 17 ways to build a track, and there wasn't all this, you know, 18 airbags and everything else that goes along with it. It was, there might be an airbag, there might be ABS, there might be traction control, but otherwise, it's an engine, transmission, fuel injection system, and it runs. And the computer systems on them were more than adequate, significantly more than adequate to run all that stuff. So it was a simple, you know, electrical and computer system. So I would say most of that kind of mantra back then made all of the other stuff a lot easier, I would say. But we still had to deal with all of the shit that the old timers still expected us to do, like it was present. Now, I don't think, especially like you brought up environmental regulations and things of that nature, there's a lot more safety protocols, there's a lot more equipment, advanced equipment, stuff in the shop that the apprentices get to use. It means that they have more to do, but I don't think as much of it is as hard. Like I don't think I've ever seen or heard of Apprentice Now doing, you know, 8 hours cleaning out drains like I used to do. Every 30 days in the wintertime, I'd be cleaning out the drains, and it was a whole day affair. And it was an absolute pain in the ass because where the drains were in the shop at the time, the rear wheels of the truck, like we had mostly trucks back then, trucks and caravans. So the rear wheels would be within 8 inches or on top of those drains. So we'd have to work, you know, you'd get work and all of a sudden they pull in another car and then you couldn't do it and you have to go find something else to do it. Right. And then you're managing all of the literal shit work. So I think there's a lot of changes. Is it harder? Is it easier? I think it's just different.
Yeah.
And getting them to understand that, you know, our challenges were hard, but their challenges are hard. They're just different.
Absolutely. And that, absolutely. And that's something I would have, you know, acknowledge as well, as they do have different challenges. And, you know, the times have changed, people have changed, protocols have changed. And so, yeah, don't get me wrong. They definitely have different challenges nowadays, but I sure don't see them, shoveling the shit for multiple hours in the middle of a shop. But you know,
no.
Times have changed.
Right. So given that, you know, you didn't necessarily struggle, but you definitely got the haze and the razz and all of that stuff in that first year. And you said you had some good mentors. Was that one that was that talk where you had, you know, you got through the shit shoveling stage and they started to trust you and you probably got your own bay after a while. You no longer had to share the detail / undercoat bay and you start to get into it. Were those mentors, would you say that they were as much personal as they were professional, or was it mostly professional?
Wow, great question. Great question, Joshua. I would have to say primarily professional, but also personal as well. You know, I could think of three that were just off the top of my head, the best mentors I had in my first 7 years. And, you know, one of them was at the end of his career. He retired. He was in his last 5 years when I worked with him, but he would, you know, we called him Mama, and he would take the time every day. If you needed something, he would come over, drop things, come see you and help you. And, you know, he would also talk to you, right? Share stories, stuff like that. And he definitely positively changed my apprenticeship for the better and taught me countless things. And, you know, he still comes by the shop every once in a while, says hi. And I think he's 82, 83 now. And, you know, he still says hi. So obviously there's some personal there too. Right. And then, there was two other guys. I'll shout them out, Amin and Dario, in my first 7 years at Sunridge. And they were awesome. Like, Dario, he taught me alignments. I was the backup alignment guy. And, you know, I spent my apprenticeship, you know, learning alignments from him. And, you know, it was a great mentor in that aspect. We didn't have as much personal relationship, but as a professional relationship, he taught me countless things. And then, Amin was the other one. And he was probably the one that taught me the most professionally, because he was that mechanical guy that, you know, you got an engine, you got a valve job, timing belts. Like, he was a wizard with that stuff. And luckily, he taught me so many things in my apprenticeship with that. And made me a better tech. And again, yeah, he would drop everything if I had a question. And so he, again, more professional with him as well, but some personal. And, you know, I just think those three specifically shaped my first half of my, or shaped my apprenticeship, you know, and helped me develop into the tech I am today, where I'm, you know, very independent and now, you know, a lead tech in my own shop. So, but yeah, I would say those three, mostly professional, but some personal. And yeah.
Now, would you say, now, all three of them, were they shop foremen, or were they simply, I don't use that word lightly, but were they simply lead technicians, like in kind of where you're standing right now, where you
Yeah. So I've never had a specific shop foreman per se, but yeah, they were just like the older guys in the shop, the longest term licensed guys, the leaders. You know, I respected them, and it was just the way they handled their role. You know, they like, it was never a question whether they would help you. It's just ask. And if you ask, they would help you. And yeah. So they're just excellent. And, you know, sometimes when I'm getting frustrated at work now, I think back to my apprenticeship and what a pain in the ass I must have been. And, you know, I'm like, okay, you know what? I got to take the time. I got to take the time and, you know, help these guys too. So, you know.
Now, yeah. On reflecting, awesome that you're bringing up that reflection part, because one of the challenges that I'm seeing with some of the younger techs that I've had the opportunity to have a conversation with is a lack of leadership on the shop floor. And to your point, you've never had a formal shop foreman, right? And you yourself are in that same position. You aren't a formal shop foreman, but it's obvious that you are that person that people will go to and that you're happy to help. The opposite side of that coin is those leaders in that position, those technicians, those senior technicians with the experience, I'm finding a lot of them are very bitter now. After years beyond that happy time, because they realize they've spent a lot of that time giving, especially to those younger people for the most part, not always young people, but for the younger people, the less experienced people, helping them with their time, their energy, effort, that they're not being compensated for their time to teach. Mm-hmm. And talking with management folks, you know, I don't want to throw out a statistic or a number because I don't have one, but my gut tells me out of the managers and leaders that I've talked to that would be above, whether it's service manager, service director, fixed ops director, unless they can put a literal dollar figure on many of these shop foremen, they don't want to pay them to mentor. And the challenge is we've got a rapid loss of registrations, especially here in Canada, things that I know that, you know, we're not even 5% of the registrations required to fulfill the need that we have across the board. So not only do we have an absence of technicians still in the trade, we have a complete lack of folks coming into the trade in order to even fill what is leaving. So when we talk about managers, bosses, service managers, GMs, whoever, talking about the role in the shop that's most needed, I think it's not necessarily the apprentices. First, it's the shop leaders, it's the shop foreman. Because both of us share a common story where, you know, in our early years as young mechanics, it was those mentors that helped shape our well-being in the trade, whether it's personally or professionally. And I would say from my own experience, I would say half of my mentorship, you know, the inbound coming to me was personal and half was professional. And I got a lot of it. And when there's shops that have folks in circumstances where they're not being compensated for that mentorship, it can leave them bitter. Now, what context, what insight do you maybe have from that?
Wow. Yeah, so I definitely have a couple thoughts on that. Just first off, I gotta say, and I think this is something when we met in person a couple weeks back that was brought up, is we have to invest in our young people and we have to invest in the apprentices and the young techs coming into the trade and even the young people thinking about going to trade school. I mean, we have to invest in them for there to be any hope to build quality technicians down the road. We all know there's a shortage, but the investment has to come from, you know, me, for example, as a lead tech in the shop, without question, the dealership, the GMs. Regarding the compensation, that could be a sticky one depending on, what side of the wall you're on. I, as you know, we were recently, we met on a technician development program, and a lot of the people there, from what I gathered, kind of were on a compensation of the shop pay or the shop production as their compensation package, if you will, for the foreman lead tech role. It's difficult. I don't have an answer as to what would be the best formula, the best pay structure for that role. You know, you could invest 2 hours a day, you could invest 6 hours a day into it, depending on, I guess, how invested you want to be, how much the dealership wants you to be invested in it, and how much they're compensating you for it. And if they're seeing results, I guess, as well, right? But for me personally, I'll speak, I guess, regarding me, is recently, as I've developed becoming a better mentor and leader, even though I don't have something specific in my pay plan regarding that, I'm definitely enjoying the results and the fruits of my labor, seeing those, for example, survey numbers like dramatically change the more I get invested. You know, over the last 6 months, our shop's had a customer satisfaction rating was in the dumps, that went, you know, it's been on a steady trend up. Our fixed rate first time scores are, you know, dramatically climbing month after month. So personally, I see the investment and I see it paying off. But yeah, absolutely. Some on this other side of the token, I could see how a lot of people get bitter about it. And I think even in the past, probably me personally, I have probably had a bitter moment over, well, you know, am I being compensated for this? And having that conversation with my service manager, and, you know, usually cooler heads prevail. But I think, I don't have an answer, but I think there has to be more done from all the leaders regarding all the leaders in the service department, the leaders in the shop, the leaders in management, to invest in those young people, because that's how you get, you know, 15 years down the road, your next leader, your next shop manager, your next lead tech. Those, you have to build the next generation and you have to invest in them.
I 100% agree. And I think the biggest challenge that we face as mechanics is that we have to figure out how to teach our own, that the circle, I believe part of our role as a mechanic, and I think this probably applies and probably could apply across all of the trades, but I think it is part of our duty as journeymen to teach. The challenge becomes when our ability to teach affects our ability to provide for our own families. And I think that conversation, professionally done and eloquently stated, can be a real conversation that we have as we go down the line. And if we can teach these young folks as they're coming into the trade that part of their role as they progress through the trade is to become leaders themselves, so that they can then teach the next generation how to communicate, you know, how to negotiate, how to sell, how to properly, how to just properly describe what it is that they're doing, right? Not being it takes hundreds of hours and thousands of times to get good at any one specific thing over and over again, so that you're not humming and hawing on a video MPI, right? Doing walkarounds and stuff like that, it's not easy to do. And being able to spend the time with our young mechanics to be able to say, you know, this is what you need to do. This is what you need to do. Okay, awesome job doing that. Cut out the but awesome job. Keep it. And that being part of our duty to teach, we just got to figure out how to make the whole thing work in terms of being compensated for it. And I don't necessarily mean, you know, I don't want to divest into flat rate and hourly and all the rest of that good stuff, but yeah, just understanding that when you have a shop full of technicians, and let's say you've got five that are at least 15 years experienced, you know damn well that all five of those are going to be spending probably an hour a day with some other technician in the shop helping them out. On average, I can almost guarantee you they're spending some anywhere from a half hour to an hour a day helping somebody do something. And we have to figure out a way to not just compensate necessarily the shop foreman or the specifically identified senior tech, but the whole shop, right? I think, you know, maybe progressing from flat rate maybe to something where it's, you know, somehow we get the team all getting compensated for the team doing well. Right? So there's got to be something in there where, you know, it's not a silver bullet that's going to fix anything. It's 1,000 golden rubies. So in this circumstance, just being able to have that conversation and teaching these young folks that we need to be having these conversations and not, ah, oh, fuck this, fuck that, not the fuck that. and getting that type of way when they get upset about not being compensated, understand that part of that is part of the duty. So thank you for that perspective. And whilst you said, I don't think I really have an answer. I think you actually came up with a couple of tidbits.
Maybe some a little bit, but I like you said, I don't have a silver bullet answer, and I don't know if there's a right way for every shop to do it. But you know, we at the end of the day, we know as lead techs and shop foremen, and we know we have to invest in the young people just the same way the previous generation invested in us. So. It's got to be there, and you know, I as I get older, but you know, I'm only 40. But as I get older and spending more time in the trade, I'm realizing and coming, being more open and willing to do it, regardless of fighting for the compensation. To you know, because I have a couple really good apprentices right now that I want to invest my time in. And that's, I think, part of the difference, too, is I want to invest my time in these young people, whereas sometimes you don't necessarily see the commitment, the passion for the job from some apprentices. And it's maybe it's just harder to build that relationship or get, you know, get developed that love or want to teach them or desire to teach them, I guess. But you know, I'm really lucky with the couple of apprentices I got right now that I want to teach them and I want to help them develop. And you could see that, you know, year after year, they're going to get better. They've already gotten better. And, you know, that helps substantially, because then it's not just about me fighting for compensation anymore. It's, I want them to do better. I want them to be, you know, 5 years from now, fighting with me for hours. And, you know, I want that. You know, a little healthy competition is good too, right? Like, I want my bay mate to one day, you know, be my successor, but not too soon, that being said, but one day, when I'm ready for it.
You are not, hey, we got to bring this up because I want to make sure everybody hears this. You are not one to shy off on competition. I went to national competition and did very well, and then went on to international competition and did very well.
Yeah. So, so it was national, but, got the plaque right there kind of thing. But yeah. So earlier in 2023, I did a competition with Nissan Canada. They brought back a Nissan NISTEC, they call it, which is a technical competition for all the technicians in Canada, specifically for us, but then each region country has their own specific program. And so I did the first 50 question online test, aced it. That took me to a regional competition where there were six of us competing in a four-part competition, so a multi-choice question, 25-question test, a diagnostic on a vehicle, a inspection of a vehicle, and a essentially like a parts replacement on an engine, but following the specific manual, service manual instructions and stuff like that. And I was one of the top three there to move on. So I felt I did pretty good. I don't know exactly how I did place there, but I moved on either way. And then made it to the national competition in Toronto for Nissan Canada. So that was at the corporate head office. And it was nine of us, three from the Western region, three from Central, and three from the Eastern region. And we competed in a day-long competition. It was amazing. I'll say that. It was amazing. I finished third overall in Canada. So I'm really proud of that. And I'm really proud of myself for, you know, achieving third. Kind of leaves a bit of room for improvement, like I've said to everybody that I've talked to about it. But, you know, I got to go for that number one spot next time. But it was an amazing experience. It went over about 6 months, and the growth I found in myself doing this competition was amazing. It pushed me to, you know, really, really, you know, be the master of my craft, be the master of my trade, and be the best that I, you know, could be in these competitions. And I did very well. I'm really proud of myself. And, you know, that it was one of a funny thing that I thought of, that once I completed and I was kind of debriefing it, I really wanted to, like, after that, I had a change of heart, and I was almost like, wow, I'd really love to train someone, you know, like one of my apprentices, to be here one day with me, or be my successor to this, or be a part of that journey for someone else, because it was such an amazing journey. Shout out to Nissan Canada, because they did a phenomenal job at every stage on that. One of your previous guests, Dale Pettigrew, as you know, he was a part of that. And just a shout out to them. They did an amazing job, and it made me want to be better. It made me want to be a better teacher. And I think it showed a bit of love and care for the technicians from the corporate side too. Like, they really went all out to make sure the technicians at each stage felt they were cared for, you know, felt the appreciation from corporate. And, you know, it actually really changed my opinion on how technicians are looked at from the corporate world. I truly can't say I had the best feelings about, you know, that segregation between corporate and the service department at a dealer level. But after doing it and seeing all the people, meeting all the people, and then, you know, seeing them since then, building relationships with some of those trainers, some of those corporate staff, it really helped my career. And it showed that, you know, the corporate brand does care about the technicians, at least at, you know, Nissan Canada. And so, yeah, it was amazing for my career. It was amazing for my personal development and my personal growth. And yeah, I can't wait to do it again, hopefully next year. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that story. That, 'cause one of the things that, you know, I didn't get to your level. I always fancy myself as I was a B tech at best, and I still managed to somehow find my way into the top 20 in Ontario back in the day. I don't even remember. It's either somewhere between 2008 and 2010 for Chrysler, and what little I got to experience in that, really, I can completely agree with you how much it changes your perception of what you're capable of doing, what you're capable of growing into. You know, it really gives you the confidence to push yourself to learn more. To anybody that's listening that's ever thought of competing for any technician, anything, the worst that you can do is not do it. That's the worst thing that you can do, is not try. And even if you try and you don't place, you've tried, and then you get a satisfaction that not only did you try, but then you start to realize, okay, maybe there's some areas I need to grow in. Maybe there's some areas I need to train in. And then you start learning those areas. And then the areas that you're already strong in, you can double down on, right? The compounding effect that healthy competition like that can do. Because it's one thing, a lot of folks may have a hobby. I love my motorcycle. I love going for a ride. I can't wait to ride it as soon as I can possibly ride it. But I know that, the skills that help me in my day-to-day, the skills that help me after hours, being able to get a little bit better at them every day to somehow either be more productive or, make a little bit more money or whatever the case would be, is just gives me a sense of pride that I'd never felt before in that same way. Because competition in sports after hours, it's like, it's competition. Yes, we need a little competition in the hockey, on the hockey rink or whatever the case may be. But when it's for work, that sense of pride in what you do every day really grows. Like, it really grows. So I would suggest anybody out there to try to give it a whirl.
I could not agree more, Joshua. I could not agree more, because competition as far as fighting for hours in a shop, that's not fun. The competition for that I did with NizTech, it was fun. Like, it was a healthy, fun competition. Whether the people moved on or not, everybody had a good time. I guarantee they all got some growth within their career and their personal level. And as far as a team building, it was an amazing team building where you have corporate, you have training departments, you have service staff. The competition was fantastic, but the healthy competition, the camaraderie, the friendships, the relationships, those all were something you can't get just in a, fighting for hours in the shop environment or anything like that. So I would strongly preach anyone, if they ever get a chance to do anything like that with their brand, their company, do it.
And that's a great segue into our, you've done this, you had a journey, you've had 7 240s, you've got this wonderful hobby, 1990s ZX twin turbo, you've spent your entire career with Nissan, you've had some, really great mentors, three of them that really helped you, professionally and a little bit personally. And now that you've spent all this time in the trade and, you've gone to competitions and such, what do you think would be your one piece of advice for technicians out there to be, happy, healthier, more productive tomorrow?
Well, first off, I think my one piece of advice would be to really invest in yourself and your craft. And I'm going to reference something, maybe you could give the exact stats, but you mentioned there's a monumental increase between a level 2 and a level 3, or a level 3 and a level 4 technician. I've, within my career, fully, I've done all my training, I'm fully completed everything, master technician, whatever it may be, and I don't see the same drive from some of the technicians in the trade where they want training, and some do, but some don't. And I would strongly encourage these fourth year apprentices, these first, second, third year licensed technicians, to hone their craft, get all in on it, go to the trainings, go to whatever you need to do, read the service manual, study, watch, I check bulletins every morning when I was first getting into it, so I knew what was out there, what was coming in, and really investing yourself in your craft, and the money will come, and you can make that $100,000. It's not difficult, but invest in yourself. Don't be complacent. Don't be lazy. Don't be satisfied with mediocre training and mediocre career, the money's there. Go get it, you know, but invest in yourself. It's worth it.
Big time. There is no investment that will pay the dividends like investing in yourself. Period. Bar none. End of chat. And to give you the stats to reiterate what I did share a couple weeks back, and share it over and over again, because no matter how many stores that I have now, you know, got through the survey, the level one completeness is U.S. folks. Just for clarity, this is all U.S. stores that I have data from. I have not got any Canadian sources yet. Working 2024, we're working on getting some Canadian stores through the survey so we can get some Canadian data. But in the U.S., of all the stores that I've surveyed, if you are level one training complete, meaning your brand training, so let's say you're at Toyota and you get your level one, you're basically your basic training complete, you're going to make no more than $40,000 a year U.S. There are almost no exceptions to that rule. Your ceiling's about $40,000. If you are level two brand training complete, so that's basically the intermediate stuff. You understand what a transmission is and you're starting to learn, you know, that there are components within it. If you have that level two complete, you are going to make $60,000 a year or less. Not more, less. And there are very, very few exceptions to this rule. And by level two, any experience years are out the door. It doesn't matter whether you have 10, 15 years in the trade. If you only have your level two complete, you're not going to make any more than 60 grand a year based on my survey statistics. Now, here's the big one here that Michael was alluding to. If you have your level three brand training complete in the U.S., of all of the, I can't remember how many states it is, I think about 12 states that I've been across, and I think about 18 different brands contained within the survey. If you have your level three brand training complete, you are going to start roughly at $80,000 a year, no less, almost no exceptions to that either. And the average income of a level three brand training complete technician is $110,000 a year US, almost no exceptions to that either. And for folks out there saying that you can't make a decent living being a mechanic, I have technicians that have submitted on the survey that are not only north of 110, obviously, because that's the average, but I have some cracking on the door of $200,000 a year. And folks, and if you're wondering how, that's flat rate. And I have seen the labor reports on these individuals. This is not 100% gravy. These are folks that are doing just as many warranty jobs as they are doing CP jobs. And these are folks who are driven, who are trained, and have absolutely amazing teams and leaders around them. So if you want to make some good money, you can, and you can do it in flat rate, and you can do it in a dealership. But it comes back to my very first founding rule that I have been preaching for years and years and years. The first thing you do as a mechanic, whether you want to be a mechanic or you are a mechanic, is you need to find a high-value leader. That is your first job. Everything else comes after. Because if you find yourself a high-value leader, you're not only going to learn, you're going to personally develop like Michael has. You're going to have a mentor in all likelihood in the shop. You're probably going to have a mentor in that leader themselves. You're going to have a great team environment that everybody wants to help everybody. And you're going to make money. You're just going to make money. And I've got the data to show it. So, Michael, I really appreciate your time this evening. I thank you very much for giving us and me a little bit of your story in life in this business, in this industry. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Joshua. And I'd like to acknowledge you for all the work you've done and your coaching and, you know, having that session that I was at with you. You've provided so much to the people through your podcast and also just in person meeting you and having that opportunity to learn from you and being coached from you. I'd like to acknowledge you for that because you're doing a stand-up job, and especially around mental health awareness too in our trade. So I would like to acknowledge you for that, and I appreciate you.
I thank you. Thank you very much, Michael. I really appreciate that. Now, folks, that is the end of another Wrench Turners podcast, but that's okay because we got another one coming next week. Don't forget, check out the description below. We have Wrench Turner's merch on Teespring. You can find the links below. And one of the things that I wanted to share with you that I'm going to make sure I'm going to say it as often as I can, because Ed Roberts shared something a few weeks back and in a recording. He actually didn't say it on recording. And I want to share it with you today. People repeat what you recognize them for. So if you're in a shop anywhere and folks around you are barking at you, look at yourself in the mirror. Are you barking at them? Because they will repeat what you recognize them for. Remember, folks, negative pushes, positive pulls, and always clean your toys before you put them away.